the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. He digs deeper for the story, and he never shovels you BS. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back. So the Blue Jays go for the sweep of the Kansas City Royals tonight in a game that can be seen on Sportsnet Ontario at 8 o'clock and, of course, can be heard on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, the pregame show at 7:30. John Farrell is the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and we're very pleased that he joins us this morning from lovely Kansas City, one of my favorite stops on the road. John, thanks so much for doing this.
Morning, Jeff. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. A couple of questions. I mean, I've got to think you're doing well after watching the way the game ended yesterday. Again, the Jays' defense, I think, is, you know, we spend a lot of time focusing on starting pitching and on offense, obviously. But, John, the one thing I've seen from your team from spring training is it's a pretty polished club defensively, isn't it?
Well, it really is, and there's a few reasons for it. One, you know, you look at the changes that we made throughout the course of last year, the athleticism, the range, arm strength, all those are there. But then when you look at the infield defense, and Brian Butterfield just does a tremendous job with each guy individually and the infield defense collectively, we have a lot of information at our disposal. You see us drastically shift certain hitters, and that's for obvious reasons or reasons that we have information for. But I think when you consider the sure-handedness of the guys that we have in this club, their arm strength and their range, that really plays a lot into it. Combine that with a number of guys that are throwing two-seam fastballs to put the ball on the ground, and it gives us plenty of opportunities to turn two or get two outs on one pitch.
I think, John, it really becomes noticeable when you put the shift on and you move Brett Laurie into that right field position. You know, I was watching that against Tampa Bay, and you look around that diamond and you go, really, there's just, it's not just the athleticism, but it's the instincts that, you know, even Adam Lind, who I don't think too many people in our business anyhow consider to be a gold glove first baseman, the instincts of just about everybody in that infield is really top shelf.
Well, it is, and I think there's... Again, we talk about reasons why, and there's a lot of preparation that goes into each series, what to anticipate. And I think when you can put those two things in combination with some athletic ability, you've got the makings of some above-average plays, but certainly being in a position to make the routine play, which can kind of go unnoticed. But if you're not there, that ball gets through, and everyone's wondering what's wrong with the pitcher. So we've made a number of good plays. I mean, the play the other night, Darren Oliver's on the mound, and Brett dives to his glove side to begin a double play. I mean, that we're looking at a first and third situation instead of, you know, we could potentially be looking at a first and third situation. Instead, we're looking at two outs, and Darren Oliver's waiting for the ball to come back to him to face the next hitter. So huge shifts in momentum because of the defense.
With John Farrell on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Okay, I guess a couple of news items, the news of the weekend. One, Drew Hutchison made his debut. But I want to talk, first of all, about Sergio Santos and the shoulder inflammation. Let me ask you this. Is that any reason that is that one of the reasons you guys went a little easy with him in spring training?
No, this was isolated to the other night. You know, the reasons in spring training that we brought him along slow, he came in throwing the ball exceptionally well. He was in great shape. There was a concerted effort to work on his changeup and a slight hand adjustment in his set position or when he's in the stretch position. So we backed him out of some games because of the way he looked physically, mm-hmm. the way he was throwing the ball. I mean, he was mid-90s right from the get-go. And we spent some time with that. We got him back to where he got six appearances in spring training, which is that's not a large number, but it's an acceptable one to start the season. And then the other night, in that one outing, when he got the save here in game one of the series, you know, he didn't feel quite right on the mound during the inning, and he's an ultra competitor, didn't want to say anything at the time, but as the night went through, as he went through the night, The stiffness started to increase. The soreness was there in the morning. And the fact is that where we are in April and we've got Coco to step in, we're not going to take any chances at all with this and get him seen. He's out in California seeing Dr. Yoakum today, and we'll have more of an update and a full workup of him sometime later today.
I mean, I know you're obviously not a doctor, but there's no sense that this is something that might require surgery or anything like that.
Everything indicates, no, because here's the thing. He was throwing 97 miles an hour just two nights ago.
Yeah, so that doesn't sound like surgery.
No, and if there's something structurally wrong, I think we'll all be extremely surprised. He obviously had some inflammation. Mm-hmm. When he tried to go through his throwing program the day after he made his last appearance, it was grabbing him a little bit in the back of the shoulder, and it was time to just, you know what, let's get this looked at.
With John Farrell on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, you do have Francisco Cordero, different type of closer than Sergio Santos. And, John, I've often wondered, and I watched this yesterday as I watched Francisco close out. Do teams, I know this sounds like a horrible sort of football type question, but do teams adjust how they go about playing in the field in the ninth inning, you know, knowing that Cordero's likely to get the ball and play a little more than Santos? I mean, you know, anytime Santos faces somebody, there's a chance there's going to be a strikeout. Does this require an adjustment in mindset on the part of the players?
No, not at all. I, going back to what we talked about before with the defense, it's anticipation, you know, of who's on the mound, what type of style he is. You know, Sergio has got tremendous swing and miss type stuff. Francisco, on the other hand, has really evolved as a pitcher as he's gotten older and equally productive in his career. He's gone about it a different way. He uses his changeup a little bit more. He uses four pitches more than just relying on mid to upper 90s velocity that he might have done 6 or 7 years ago. So guys are going to know that you know, he's not going to walk people, and he's going to put the ball in play, and they're ready to go.
And, John, I guess one of the in making this move, one thing that is kind of flowing under the radar, or one pitcher who's kind of flown under the radar that's just increased your depth in the bullpen, has been Luis Perez. And I've got to think that with this move up by Cordero, I hate the phrase responsible batter, you know, responsible innings, but I've got to think that Luis Perez may be getting a more responsible role as a result of this.
Well, he might fly under the radar for others outside of our clubhouse, but inside, this is a guy that has been on a mission since the first day of spring training. He has really honed or sharpened his slider even further from a year ago. He pitches with a lot of confidence, and there's complete trust in bringing him into a game in any situation. So, you know, fortunately, or unfortunately, in Sergio's situation, he's taking a time out here. But fortunately for us, Alex has put together, we think, a pretty deep bullpen. Evan Crawford comes back up to replace Santos, but Perez will continue to get the ball in key spots. But that doesn't mean he's now our eighth inning guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Jansen, Frazier, Oliver, Perez, we feel like we've got the ability to match up all the way through and then shut it down with Cordero.
John, what did you see out of Drew Hutchison in his first outing? I mean, the only concern I had, and Greg Zahn kind of alluded to this as well, and it's a guy's first start. I get that. But was the secondary stuff good enough for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was. And as he continues to get comfortable here, because he's very consistent with his fastball in terms of throwing enough fastballs for strikes. That doesn't mean he's a one-pitch pitcher and he can rely just solely on a two-seamer and a four-seamer. But there was some swing and miss to his changeup. Now, he got into a couple of fastball counts where I thought he showed his changeup a little bit to both Hosmer and Gordon. Those were the four runs. Those accounted for, I guess, three of the five runs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's enough of a slider there. He does enough of the other things inside the game to make him a solid starter. And I love the kid's poise. And he's not afraid of any challenge that you throw at him. And that was evident in spring training, and I thought it was pretty much the same the other night.
With John Farrell on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, John Brandon Morrow takes the mound tonight. After his last outing, and I'm paraphrasing him, but after his last outing, he mentioned that he wanted to look at the tape. He suggested to us there was something, possibly something mechanical he thought he had detected. Has he had to make any corrections to his mechanics between starts?
No, and I think it's more timing. Because when you see the elevation of the fastball with Brandon, and he'll miss a little bit to his arm side, to me that's when he gets a little quick over the rubber and he starts to drift towards home plate too early. and it just doesn't allow him to leverage the fastball downhill. I think the biggest key for him, and this is something that continually is talked about with him, is the use of his curveball. In Cleveland, he had it. In spring training, he's had it the last two starts. It's been a little bit hit and miss for him. Against this team that we're going to face again tonight, it's a young, aggressive, good fastball hitting team, and his ability to use his curveball for strikes will be even that much more important for him tonight.
John, do you think in general, it's funny, you mentioned the curveball because I know we talked about Kyle Drabek as well and using the curveball. Have pitchers become a little too fast in general? Have pitchers become a little too fastball changeup crazy?
No, because pitchers are going to use what they feel most comfortable with and what their strengths are.
Okay.
You know, we talk about a curveball like, you know, they're found on the street corner. But that's a pretty darn tough pitch to master. It's a lot to me. It's a lot like a fastball. You're born with it. You know, guys can manufacture a breaking ball through a slider, but a true curveball is something that you know, you just don't teach that. That's something that you come out of the womb with. And guys have the ability to spin the breaking ball and spin the baseball with a lot of tight spin to create a solid average or above average major league curveball. But Brandon has that, and when his timing and his delivery is right, it's a well executed pitch. When it's not, that's when it stays up and lacks any kind of depth and rotation to the overall break.
I noticed that Buck Martinez set up a meeting for J.P. Aaron Seabee and Brett Laurie with George Brett. And I was telling someone, one of the things that George Brett was able to balance off-field fun with on-field performance better than maybe just about anybody else in the game. How much of an impact do you think he can have with these two guys when it comes to that part of the game? Never mind, you know, talking baseball and what they have to look forward to, but just kind of knowing what it's like to be a major league player, have a good time, but when the first pitch is called, be ready to go.
Well, from what I gathered out of the lunch and the conversation that they all shared, it was a great experience for him, not just on, you know, George talking about the way he played the game and went about it. I don't know how much personal things they got into, but the one thing that is very clear that when George played the game, it was a different time than it is now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all seen the recent reports on the social media and the things, the exposure that can be out there. So I think the players of today have to be that much more guarded and conscientious with their personal life than anything that goes on the field. And that's something we continue to educate along the way. But still, this is the game of baseball, and some of the things that George talked about, I think that's one of the traditions of our game, is that to be able to pass on those experiences, hopefully 20 years from now, JP and Brett will be sitting at a table with some young kid, and they'll be able to do the same in return.
John, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much. Good luck tonight, and safe travels to Baltimore.
All right, Jeff, we'll see you back in Toronto.
Take care. That is John Farrell, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. So there you go. Sergio Santos being examined today by Dr. Luis Yoakam, and get a further report on that shoulder inflammation. And as John Farrell said, the shoulder inflammation not at all linked to why or to the reason for the Blue Jays using Sergio Santos in spring training the way they used him. So we're not talking B.J. Ryan in the back injury, folks, because I know that's what a lot of you were thinking out there. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. So I guess this is it, the first serious injury of the season for the Blue Jays. I mean, serious. We don't know what it is yet, but first injury resulting in time in the disabled list for Sergio Santos. How concerned are you about Francisco Cordero's ability to hold the fort until Santos comes back? I've got to tell you, you know me, I'm a big fan of strikeouts from my closer. I've made the case often you can't win in the American League East with a closer who's going to put the ball in play all the time. But I have less of an issue right now, given the makeup of this bullpen, given what I've seen from Luis Perez, given the depth in this bullpen. I have less of an issue with this. I'm less concerned, let's put it that way, than I would have been last year. But I want to get your take on it. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Can the Jays continue to win with Francisco Cordero as their closer? Your thoughts, your calls. This is a Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan. Today at 4. Offering up a stiff serving of truth on the house. Come and get it. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Left-handed hitter, Cordero's pitch. Hit on the ground to second. Vizquel has it. The second one. Escobar to first. Call it two. Another inning-ending, game-ending double play. As the Blue Jays pull off a 5-3 win here in Kansas City.
The Jays go for the sweep tonight in Kansas City. Brandon Morrow on the mound. You can watch the show on Sportsnet Ontario. Blue Jays Central will be on Sportsnet Ontario at 7:30 with a game to follow at 8 o'clock. Or you can listen to it on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, the pregame show with young Mr. Michael Wilner at 7:30. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. So you've heard it from manager John Farrell. Sergio Santos off to California to have his inflamed shoulder examined by Dr. Lewis Yoakum. Francisco Cordero, the closer. How does that sit with you? Do you think the Blue Jays can keep winning with Francisco Cordero as your everyday closer? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. I don't know why. I mean, normally I should be looking at this and be worried, because I love closers who can come in and strike guys out. I'm not a big fan of balls in play. Now, granted, with the Jays' defense, it's a little different, but I'm not a big fan of balls in play. I want guys to come into games and strike out hitters. Well, Francisco Cordero is not a strikeout pitcher anymore. Sergio Santos clearly is. So what do you think? Can the Jays win with Francisco Cordero as closer? Is the much-vaunted Blue Jays bullpen depth enough to get them through however long they will be without Sergio Santos? Clifton and Etobicoke, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And you have no concern about Francisco Cordero, do you? You've got other concerns.
There you go, sir. I'm not worried about the interim closer here. I'm worried about tonight's starting pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a guy who I remember a couple weeks ago, after the game where he left, I think in the seventh inning, with a one-run lead, and it was Darren Oliver, I think, blew the save there.
Mm.
And in the post-game, I heard him saying that, you know, he did his job. This is Mr. Morrow here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm kind of wondering, Jeff, if this guy wants to be here, because usually, the party line would be, like we lose as a team, we win as a team.
No, I think what he was saying, and I remember that question. I remember the question put to him. He was asked specifically about his performance, I didn't take that in any way, shape, or form, because it was specifically about his performance. And
yeah, but that wouldn't that
the guy signed a 3-year contract, so I think it's safe to say he wants to. He wants to be here. No, you know what, Clifton? I would notice stuff like that, and uh-huh. I didn't get that sense. That's what it was at all.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear. But regarding tonight's start, though.
Yes.
Now, if he were to lose to Kansas City, like, this would be like the first losing pitcher in Kansas City this year, right?
I believe
now,
so.
I'd like to know, where's his confidence going to be after that game?
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't think he would. I mean, I don't think he's going to come out of the game thinking, geez, I can't even beat the Kansas City Royals when everybody else can. I think the bigger concern for me with Brandon Morrow is the same thing. It's funny, and Alex Anthopoulos was the one who told me about this last year. He said, if you take a look at Brandon Morrow's numbers from 2010 to 2011, what is the biggest difference? Well, the biggest difference is in home runs allowed and extra base hits. That is what concerns me about Brandon Morrow. When Brandon Morrow missed last year, he missed up and he was hit. The year before when he missed, wasn't hit that much. That is what concerns me, Clifton, about what I've seen this year. Is in some ways it is like a rewind of what happened all too often last year. That gives me a little bit of concern. As John Farrell pointed out today, he would like to see Brandon Morrow refine the use of his curveball or adjust the use of his curveball. Tonight, be a perfect example. The Kansas City Royals are an aggressive team. They're a young team. They're going to be sitting on the fastball. Perfect opportunity to use your breaking stuff against a team like this. So let's see what Brandon Morrow can do tonight against this young team. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Just because Brandon Morrow signed a multi-year contract doesn't mean to me that he is the finished product as a pitcher, nor does it mean to me that the Blue Jays think he's a finished product as a pitcher. I think this is a guy who still has a little more work to do. I'm still a big believer in him. Again, I love the stuff. I don't see the A.J. Burnett comparisons. I see a guy who in the past has had lousy games, has made adjustments, and has come back and pitched well. So I'm not all that concerned about Brandon Morrow. I want to know, though, without Sergio Santos, and we don't know how long he's going to be out. Without Sergio Santos, do you think that Francisco Cordero can get the job done the way he got it done yesterday? And, folks, that is how Francisco Cordero is going to save games for you. He's not going to come in and strike out the side. There are going to be balls in play. There might even be guys on base. This guy can't come in and throw 96, 97 anymore. Jason in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You seem to have a fair amount of confidence in Cordero. You are like me.
I have a lot of confidence in him, in Cordero. You don't get over 300 saves without having confidence in yourself. And to be a closer, I think the number one trait you need to have is that confidence in yourself. So, you know what? There's not a problem with him. I think Anthopoulos brought him in and Darren Oliver, and, you know, he shored up the bullpen just for this fact that, you know, you're bringing in Santos, who's a younger guy. He's fairly new to the closing position.
Yep.
So to have the veteran arms behind him, it would help him out. But with him down, I don't think you're going to miss anything. The way the defense is playing, you know, there's no problem. The issue I have with the Jays right now is with the starting pitching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ricky Romero, he's doing what he does, and Drabek, right, for the moment, you know, he's proven himself. But behind them, you know, Morrow, he's 500 right now, and Carreño and...
Carreño's not here.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's what I mean. He's not here. So, I mean, aside from that 1-2, you don't really have the 3-4-5. I mean, we're a little slim there. Where do you see us going? I mean, in order to be competitive, we need to have the starters. And the bullpen's good, the defense is good, and the bats are good. So, I mean, the starting pitcher right now is the only issue I see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him going anywhere to get a starting pitcher, if that's what you're asking. I know Jerry Howarth has said in spring training he thought the Jays need another starter. I have no problem with Henderson, Alvarez. I have no problem with Brandon Morrow. And frankly, based on what I've seen from Kyle Drabek and based on his confidence in that curve and his whatever mechanical adjustments the Jays made with him, in spring training, I mean, clearly his fastball location is, but he's got a better idea of what he's doing out there. You know, I get the sense now when I watch Kyle Drabek pitch that when stuff starts to unravel, he thinks that he has a way to stop the bleeding. That is a huge step forward for him, to have the confidence that somehow, some way, you've got something in your arsenal that can get you out of this situation. And that makes a big difference. I still think that this team needs another bat. I've thought that all along. I still think it needs another bat. I am not ready yet to pass judgment on the starting rotation. Now, if the Jays were to miraculously get another starting pitcher in a deal, I certainly wouldn't turn it down. But I still want to see what Hutchison has. I want to see Jenkins. I want to see Deck McGuire. There's so much pitching depth in this organization. I want to see what it's capable of doing at the major league level. I do not want to have to part with a young player to bring in somebody and then find out I had that under my nose all the time. And I know fans probably don't want to hear that, but I know that's how Alex Anthopoulos is thinking. I don't want to make a deal to bring somebody in and then find out that I had that guy already in my organization. I just didn't give him a chance. Andrew and Ajax, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
In terms of Francisco Cordero, I got 100% confidence. You know, before we got Santos, there was a lot of talks that we were going to go after him to be our closer to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And with the improved interior defense and all the double plays returning, it's not bad having a guy who's going to induce some ground balls. My real concern is what happens if Santos is out 3 or 4 weeks and Cordero goes on a bit of a tear, how John Farrell's going to manage having both guys and what he's going to do with Santos at that point.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, I guarantee you John Farrell would love to have that that problem. Here's the thing to remember about Sergio Santos, and this was part of the thought process in signing him to a long-term contract. Because there's a little bit of uncertainty with Sergio Santos, what you've done by giving him the long-term contract is you've essentially said to him, you know what, you're our closer. We have confidence in you as our closer. But should something happen, you know, we've got you locked up. You're going to get good money. You know, you are going to be taken care of. And for a guy like Santos with a couple of kids who didn't make a lot of money when he was, 21, 22, 23, that's a pretty significant bit of insurance for a guy to have. So I don't think it would be that much of an issue as opposed to if Sergio Santos were here on a one-year deal, maybe felt that he proved himself as a pitcher last year, as a closer last year. Now he gets hurt. Now he's with the team where he's lost his closing job. You see what I'm saying? I think that contract will really come in handy in that regard. But as I said, if Francisco Cordero, you know, has 10 saves, if Santos is out for a while and Cordero has 10 saves, John Farrell would, that's an issue John Farrell would not mind dealing with. But, you know, I think before we go there, though, we have to see what Dr. Yoakam says about Sergio Santos. So one thing I will say, having Yoakam look at Santos, you know, at least the one thing about Yoakam is he's not, I wouldn't say a knife first guy. That sounds bad. I think he's more likely to err on the side of rehabilitation than surgery. Some guys, as soon as they see a pitcher, their first instinct is, okay, it's surgery. Let's just see what the degree is. I think with Yoakam, you have a chance that it's maybe just going to be rehab. But again, as John Farrell said, the Jays have seen nothing that suggests this is a structural situation for them. Do we have time to squeeze in one more call? Yeah, let's squeeze in Mike in Oakville very quickly. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go ahead, Mike.
I think you guys have all missed the point. I think you've got a guy named Santos who is not a closer. He's a shortstop who throws hard. Somebody needs to send this guy to the minors and let him learn how to be a pitcher, and then he can come up and close. But until
what he did last year with Chicago was just fluke.
I think it was. I think guys here have figured him out. Look at this year. I mean, if we don't have all these blown saves, we're running away with the American League East.
You really think that?
Yeah.
Okay. Ed Willis is a columnist with the Vancouver Province. You know that the Canucks have been eliminated, stripping us of all sorts of mirth and merriment, potential mirth and merriment, not having the Canucks to kick around anymore. As hard as that is going to be for this show, as hard as that is going to be for Canadian hockey fans, imagine how poor Ed Willis, columnist with the Vancouver Province, feels. He doesn't have the Canucks to kick around anymore. Actually, maybe he does. Ed Willis joins us, and the Jeff Blair Show returns on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Blue Jays versus Royals. Pre-game with Mike Wilner, tonight at 7. When he says it or writes it, you know he's going to own it. No backing down. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Made a nice evasive move. Got away from Jarrett Stoll, but he can't get away from Lewis. And he's down. Jarrett Stoll shoots, scores! Jarrett Stoll scores the goal. The Los Angeles Kings have beaten the President's Trophy winners and are headed for the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Jarrett Stoll is going to get some votes for Canada's Athlete of the Year, I think. Not really. I said I'm conflicted. I miss the Canucks already. It's like guaranteed topic every morning after they play. I've got to think Ed Willis, the sports columnist for the Vancouver Province, is going to miss him some Canucks as well, aren't you, Mr. Willis? Apparently not.
A rally point for the country, so there was something in that. But, you know, on the plus side, it's going to cut down on the rioting this summer. So, you know, there's a little ray of sunshine there.
I was going to say, because I know riot season is something that people in BC look forward to. It's sort of like deer season.
Well, this one caught people off guard. Maybe they just didn't have time to get their game faces on here.
And all kidding aside, let's kid for about another 10 minutes, shall we? No, all kidding aside, what do you do with this team if you're Mike Gillis, if you're Canucks ownership?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that one's going to play out over the next couple of days here. It's, you could make a case for about 10 different scenarios and back it up. There's probably a case for standing pat. There's probably a case for ripping some of the, key pieces up. Pretty clearly the goaltending situation is going to change and they're going to try to move Roberto Luongo first, but there's some things have to happen before that occurs. And at the end of the day, it's still the President Trophies team. In the last two seasons they've had 117 and 111 points. I know it's the regular season, but that's something. It's a real interesting one, and it's made even more complicated by the way they went out this year in five games.
With Ed Willis on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ed, the one thing I wouldn't do if I was them, and this may fly in the face of what some people are saying, but I would not be a big fan of getting rid of Alain Vigneault as coach.
Well, yeah, but the unfortunate reality is somebody might have to take the fall for this, and the first guy in line is the head coach. I'm with you. And again, you can build. This is one of those cases you can build. If Duncan Keith doesn't elbow Daniel Sedin in the head, if Daniel Sedin is available for game one of that series with the Kings, it changes so many things. It gives them a power play. It gives them a first line. It gives them scoring. And all those things were huge issues in this series. And by the time Daniel got back in the lineup, they were already down 3-0, and that was just too big a hill to climb. There are people who don't share that view. And I certainly understand that. I'd say that's kind of 50-50 right now. That's just a gut feeling.
Ed, what, Roberto Luongo is, as you said, I mean, that's the obvious, move out there. But how hard would it be to move this guy?
That's a good question. And, the organization thinks it can be done. The cap is $5.2 million, so that's manageable. He turns 34 in the fall. There's a lot of miles under the hood, so those are all considerations. I think, if nothing else, these playoffs have shown there's a lot of teams that have a gaping need in goal. So, I think that plays in the Canucks' favor. And the other thing they're going to consider is between the two of them, they're going to get a hell of a lot more from Corey Schneider in the open market than they are in Luongo. And, this team does need some pieces, and it hasn't drafted very well for the last 4 years. And, it needs some prospects in the pipeline. That's another consideration. I still think the play is to go to Luongo, give us five teams. You'd accept a trade to and proceed from there.
I mean, moving Schneider would be so counterintuitive, wouldn't it?
Well, somebody made a great point last night. You're never going to get as good or as valuable a player as what he represents to the Canucks. This could be, and I know there's a big difference between being a backup and a number one, but this could be the next great start at the position. he's the real deal, and he's done it for two seasons now. So it's going forward, that's the guy you want, and he really becomes a key piece for this team.
And how is this this first round ouster going to sit with the fans? Is it harder, do you think? And I know it's early out there, and
yeah.
but is it going to be harder than going out in the Stanley Cup final or in the conference final?
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I mean, this is one of the reasons why there was no rioting is there was a state of shock, you know, and then people still believed they were going to come back from 3-0, and you know, and everybody was like, you know, if they can win that game 6 in Los Angeles, that's it. It's our series, but it really, like I said, it's the losing to the 8 seed, it's losing to 5 games, it's not being competitive in so many crucial areas in front of both the Nets, and you know, their inability to handle the Kings forecheck. You know, that defense is, you know, that was one of the pride of the teams, and they just folded in the face of the Kings forechecking pressure.
Do we have any idea what happened to Ryan Kesler? He looked to me like he might have been hurt.
Well, yeah, Bieksa was supposedly hurt. I'm sorry, that only goes so far, though. He was it wasn't like he was in the, you know, in the Stanley Cup Finals last year when he was playing on one leg. He could get from place to place, but again, there's about 3 million theories out there of what happened to him. But he was a shadow of the player. He was for the first 3 rounds of the playoffs last year.
With Ed Willis on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Ed is the sports columnist with the Vancouver Province. If you were Roberto Luongo, and again, I know his contract, there's several clauses in his contract, and you know he can name teams and all this, but do you think there's any chance that he would essentially go to the Canucks and say, look, I mean, I know what the clause is in my contract, but why don't you just try to get something done? And, you know, I mean, obviously I don't want to go to Columbus,
yeah.
But, you know, here's even 8 or 10 teams, like broaden the list a little bit. Do you think there's any chance of him doing that?
Yeah, I think so. You don't have to be Scotty Bowman to look at the standings and figure out which team needs a goalie. And I would submit Tampa Bay it remains the most likely destination for so many different reasons. I know that was a factor in the, you know, when Columbus tried to trade Rick Nash at the deadline, there was, you know, the market was so small and so constricted, they never could get the deal they wanted. So that might help. But I think in Luongo's case, it's a different animal because basically whatever the Canucks take from the trade is going to be Corey Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
That's the player they're going to get back. They'll be lucky if they get a second round draft pick for Luongo because the team's going to be taking on that contract. And, you know, that'll take the place of players coming back. So I think on that level, the deal will be easier to do for the Canucks.
You know, Ed, it's odd. I mean, the Canucks have a certain reputation around the NHL. I didn't necessarily think you saw all the whining and diving this year you saw in the past. I mean, that might be a little simplistic, but I didn't think you saw that. But is there a sense around that team that maybe it's time for a little bit of culture change? Or is that, you know, is that just purely an outsider looking in and not necessarily understanding what makes that team click and what's made it so successful in recent years?
Well, I don't know if that perception exists within the team, but in this market, I think it does. There's been like just a chronic lack of grit and toughness. And again, you ask the question, you know, does Duncan Keith take that run at Daniel Sedin if there's some muscle behind him? And the, you know, the Twins really have been abused for the last 2 years. Gillis has tried to build this team along the Detroit model and we'll just, you know, overwhelm you with our skill. And if you want to get tough, we'll beat you with our power play.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't really play out that way. So, you know, that was really why they did the Cody Hodgson for Zach Cassian trade. It got them a young power forward. I see them adding, that element. I don't think they're going to be able to do it at a high level, but they've got to add some sandpaper and grit to this team.
And you touched on this earlier, Ed, the defense, which, you know, I think when the Canucks were playing really well, I mean, there was a lot of focus on the goaltending, a lot of focus on the Sedins. But I thought last year, even when they lost to Boston, a lot of games where they had a lot of success. That defense was just so good. I mean, they would join the rush. They just, so many good things seemed to start with them. And I just didn't get the sense in this series that they were up to the task. Do they need that quote unquote stud defenseman?
Well, I think that's where that's the way it's shaping up. And for me, that was the most shocking thing about this series. What was the defense's inability to handle the Kings' forecheck? The defense is the engine that drives the Canucks game, both offensively and defensively. And it just, not only was it wasn't there, but I mean, they were all over the map. Alex Edler really is an all-star level defenseman, and he was awful. Bieksa was bad. Chris Tanev was exposed in that series against the Kings. Further to your question about the stud defenseman, there's been an awful lot of interest in Shea Weber in this market. He's a BC boy. There's been some hard feelings between the Predators and him, vis-a-vis the arbitration hearing last year. So that will be an interesting to watch as things unfold this playoff season. Now, if Nashville makes a run to the final, I think all bets are off.
Who does Vancouver cheer for now, Ed? I'm asking you to speak for your people. do the playoffs cease existing
in my heart, and because I'm an Ottawa boy, I want to believe that they're focused. They throw their mighty support right behind the Senators.
Do you think there's a chance they'd riot in Vancouver if the Senators won the Cup?
If they lost in Game 7, maybe. No, I don't think so. No, I think, I think even the starch was taken out of the rioters with that performance against the Kings.
Ed, I appreciate you doing this. I know it was a long night last night, and you'll have a few long days ahead of you.
All the best, Jeff, and thanks for having me on.
Take care. That is Ed Willis. He is a columnist with the Vancouver Province. The Canucks out of the playoffs. Don't know what we're going to do, Travis. I'm sitting here rocking back and forth. What are we going to do with no Canucks to pick on? It's awful. I mean, we asked for some suggestions from fans and hatred, and they didn't come through. I just don't know what we're going to do. Maybe could we become the official show of the Ottawa Senators on this station? Why don't we do that? Official show of the Phoenix Coyotes. Yeah, we'll take it under advisement. That's it for me. The official hockey show, the official hockey show to end all hockey shows, is Hockey Central. And they are next. And you'll have all three of them. You'll have Millard, you'll have Kiprios, and you'll have McLean and John Garrett. So there'll be a lot of Vancouver angst, and we will begin the post-mortem in Vancouver. John Garrett joins the trio on Hockey Central. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. This has been the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.